Dean LaRotonda.
Oh. Okay, I got that. All right, so welcome everyone to the August 26, 2020 9/11 and Other Deep State Crimes teleconference. Craig, you want to take the role?
Sure. As usual, I'll just read who I have, and anybody who's missing can let me know. I have Ann Hendrick, Pat McGuire, Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, David Roll, Jamie Lee, John O'Malley, Carl Golovin, Lynn Cornelison, and hold on, let me just change pages here. And I have Nita Renfrew, Pat O'Connell, Peter Ketchum, Richard Gage, Ted Walter, and I have Robinson, who's what's the first name there?
Somebody beginning with 724, the number begins with. Is that any? Can you identify yourself?
Jean LaRotonda.
Okay. All right.
Pittsburgh.
And we also have Beverly Rubick, who's going to be one of our speakers. Yeah, did I miss anyone? I'm sure I did.
Yes, you have Sherry Jacobs as speaker.
Okay, so I guess you're okay. I'm just going to go back to the first page here because you should be showing as usual, and there you are. Actually, no, you aren't. Anyway, okay, yeah. So Sherry, and who else did I not call?
Stu Nelson.
Stu Nelson, okay.
Stu, what does your phone number start with?
972.
And the next three numbers?
617-0876.
Okay. You see which one? There's two Pat O'Connells, Craig. Do you see that?
Yes, I did see that. So one of them is, okay.
He's the first one, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. So I got everybody then? Everybody else?
Yeah, how do I mute one?
I don't think I read. Oh, yeah. Lynn and Nita. Lynn Cornelison and Nita Renfrew joined after I started reading. Their names are there now. So there's two more. Anybody else? Okay. So I guess we're good to go, Cheryl.
Okay, great. So are there any objections to the July minutes as they've been presented? Hearing none, then.
Hi, I'm just announcing myself.
Yep, hi, Fern. Okay. Yeah, so hearing no objections to the minutes, then they're approved for the July meeting. And thank you again to Craig and to Ann for getting those minutes going. They're really doing a great job on that. Okay, and let's get started with our first speakers, which is going to be Richard Gage and Ted Walter. And I don't think they need any introduction with this group, so I'm just going to turn it over to them. Richard and Ted, thanks for joining us, and go ahead.
Hi, everybody who doesn't know about AE 9/11 Truth. I'm an architect with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and Ted is our Director of Strategy and Development. We're going to be just taking less than 2 minutes to tell you about the conference. For those of you who don't know about it, it's very exciting. It's free. We're putting it on. We're working very, very hard to make it exciting for everybody. It's this awesome platform that we have. It happens Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night on September 11, 12, and 13. On Friday, it's at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'll give you a reflection about our history and what we see coming up and what's going on right now, which is what this conference is all about, because we're bringing in Matt Campbell, who lost his brother Jeff in the towers, in the North Tower. He was blown up. We have, to put it crudely, we have Ted here to talk about that. That's the exciting news that we have going on here, a tailor-made legal case in the UK here for us. And then Friday night, we follow up with the request for correction. That will be called Closing In on NIST. So Ted will be leading that effort along with Tony Zambodi and Lawyers Committee for 9/11 inquiry, Mick Harrison, the attorney who's helping us with that. And then we turn it right over to LC 9/11 Lawyers Committee. They have a lot of very exciting projects to announce. So don't miss that one either. Sunday, we start at 3 p.m. Eastern with Dylan Avery, author of director of Loose Change 9/11. And Leroy Halsey will be here, too, because this film that he's making now is about Leroy Halsey. Then we go to the actual evidence. Roland Engel will be talking about Building 7 and what the Halsey study from the University of Alaska has found and some detail there. And I will be going on about the Twin Towers. And all that's less than an hour, so don't worry. For those of you who have seen this, that evidence six times. We move on to the highlight of the evening. The three pioneers of the 9/11 truth movement, David Ray Griffin, Niels Harrit, and Stephen Jones, all on one platform. That's going to be very, very exciting. So don't miss that. You can ask them questions also at our website. Where you watch this, you watch it on our website, 8E911truth.org. At 6 p.m. on Sunday, we go to the big picture, and we look at we bring on Daniel Ganzer, False Flags and Wars of Terror. John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute after him, the advancing police state, all as a result of 9/11, all tied in directly to 9/11, and followed with Internet Censorship from James Corbett. The Library of Alexandria is on fire. That wraps up our three-day conference. Let's jump right into a little more detail here with Ted Walter on the UK request for an inquest. Go ahead, Ted.
Thanks, Richard. Hey there, everybody. So one of the projects that Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is working on right now is we're teaming up with the family of Jeff Campbell, who, as Richard mentioned, died in the North Tower on 9/11. His brother, Matt Campbell, has been very active for the last several years, raising awareness about 9/11 and what happened to his brother, and trying to get a new inquest into his brother's death. For those who don't know, inquests are, I guess, a legal process or procedure that's performed in the UK when somebody dies in suspicious or unusual circumstances. There's sort of a special inquiry to determine the cause of the person's death. And there was a joint inquest held in 2013 for nine of the approximately 60 British 9/11 victims. There was only an inquest for nine of the victims because that was the number that had remains actually recovered from the World Trade Center site and repatriated to the UK. And so under British law, if these remains are repatriated to the UK, then that triggers an inquest or the need for an inquest. And so I don't know of the other victims, if their remains were found and just not repatriated, or if, you know, that huge percentage, their remains weren't found. But anyway, we all know that many of the majority of the, or large percentage of the people who died at the World Trade Center, their remains have not been found. In any case, there is a procedure that allows for an inquest. Sorry, hearing a lot of feedback and noise suddenly.
Not me.
So there's a procedure that allows for under British law, allows for an inquest to be reopened if the family of the victim, or maybe other parties, I don't know, but basically finds that there was evidence, either new evidence emerges or the family finds evidence that was not considered at the original inquest that has some bearing on how the person died. And in the finding of the inquest in 2013, it said that the collapse of the North Tower was caused by the impact of the airplane. And so on that ground, the Campbell family can basically challenge the finding of the original inquest and say that evidence was, there was, you know, obviously a huge volume of evidence that was not considered at the original inquest. And what's really encouraging, I think, and Matt's been pushing to do this for several years, and I think we sort of zeroed in on this in the last couple of years as something that we thought really had a chance and that we wanted to help him with. But we were sort of, his sense was that we had to wait for, to see if there would be a snap election in the UK, and then there would be a new prime minister, potentially Jeremy Corbyn. And his thinking was that a Jeremy Corbyn administration would be much kinder to this application for a new inquest, because the first hurdle that we have to clear in order to get the new inquest is the attorney, whoever the attorney general is. We have to seek their authority or their endorsement in order to apply to the high court to actually get a new inquest ordered. So that's why, sort of part of why the timing of this is happening now was there was an election towards the end of last year. Boris Johnson stayed in power. And so we're like, okay, well, now it's time to try it, because that didn't happen. Really what we've discovered in the last couple months has actually been really encouraging in terms of like how this area of law is practiced and what the threshold is in order to, the threshold of evidence that we need to put forward in order to get the new inquest granted. Essentially, if there's any new evidence, and that evidence, if there's even a chance that evidence could change the original verdict of the original inquest, then the new inquest is supposed to be granted. So the threshold is quite low, and the law is really designed so that it's very easy for families. Still hearing a fair amount of noise in the background. Could somebody?
Just hang
somebody
on a second, Ted. I'm going to put everyone on mute. Just 1 second, okay? And then
okay.
I'll have to unmute you. So just hang on a second.
All right.
Okay, Ted, you're good to go.
Okay. So, and sorry for all the sort of the legal detail here, but it's part of why this is such an important project is that the legal framework of this really makes it a very promising opportunity to get what we're looking for. Essentially, the law is really designed so that it's not difficult for families to get a new inquest if the evidence emerges that the original inquest was flawed in some way, if the finding of the original inquest was wrong. And we really, you know, learned this over the last few months as we started consulting with this barrister in the United Kingdom who specializes in inquests. He's actually an assistant coroner himself. He's done a lot of litigation and cases related to inquests and related to public inquiries. His name is Nick Stanage. We started to see this entire process as really being, as Richard said, tailor-made for the kind of evidence that we have, that 9/11 Truth Movement has developed over the last 19 years, the evidence that AE 9/11 Truth is obviously very well-equipped to present effectively. And we had this barrister, Nick Stanage, who was really, gave us some very promising legal advice and seems sort of just perfectly qualified in every possible way to take on this case and help, you know, essentially represent the Campbell family in applying for this new inquest. So we're really excited. We're really optimistic about this. We are going to be filing the application for the new inquest, or Matt Campbell's family will be filing that application around the 9/11 anniversary. We are sort of rushing to get it done. It may end up being a little bit later than the anniversary itself. The petition that Nick Stanage is drafting is going to be well over 2,000 pages. It's going to include probably at least a few dozen peer-reviewed papers that have been published by different authors who are part of the 9/11 Truth Movement. It will include at least 10 expert witness statements. It will include lots of raw data, such as things like the FDNY oral histories, with all the eyewitness accounts of explosions, and so on. So we're really excited. We expect the process of, like, the road to actually getting the new inquest to take 1 to 2 years, potentially, if it kind of takes as long as it could. It might be a little faster than that. Maybe within a year it could be granted. I think the big question on, you know, probably in the back of anybody's mind as well, are they going to treat this in a legitimate way? We're talking about the Attorney General of the United Kingdom. She's a member of Boris Johnson's administration. You know, she's a Conservative MP in the UK. The law is really clear that there's not a lot of wiggle room here, and there's not a lot of room for discretion. And it's very, very kind to families who are trying to get a new inquest. If there's any doubt, the whole idea of the law is if there's any doubt as to how someone died, that a new inquest should be performed. So we're really optimistic, and we think that once the application for the new inquest is filed, that we will have some success in getting other British 9/11 families to support the campaign, and the families, specifically the families that had inquests before, that perhaps some of them will join in the request, so that if it goes through, there would be another joint inquest with at least some of those families participating, and that it could just be this catalyst that, you know, if it goes the way that it potentially could, will just ripple outwards, where now you have many of the British 9/11 families who believe, you know, what we all know about how the towers came down, and then it's established in a court of law in the UK, and that could ripple outwards to the US, to 9/11 families in the US, the media, and so on. So we're really excited about it. I hope, you know, that I imagine some of you guys have received our emails. That's sort of the inside scoop on it, why we are so excited about it. It's an expensive endeavor. The attorney, Nick Standage, that the Campbell family is hiring is very expensive. That's why we've, you know, gone about trying to raise funds, and the fundraising deadline for that is, next week, September 1st. So that's the gist of it. I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody has.
Okay, great. And I know, Richard, you need to leave pretty soon. And Ted, are you on a time frame also?
No, not rigidly, but I would say within like 15 to 20 minutes would be ideal.
Okay, great. So we have a huge agenda tonight. And so I'm going to ask, we just do about maybe 5 to 10 minutes of Q&A. And so I'm going to cut people off after that. And I hate to do that, but that's where we're at tonight. So please forgive me for having to do that. So I'm going to put it in Q&A mode. If you'd like to ask them a question, please do *6. Okay. So we have our first question from David Rold. David, go ahead. David?
Hello. Yes, I have a question for Richard. Richard, do you live in Idaho?
Oh, wait, he might be muted. Let me just see.
Okay.
When I put it on mute, I think I did. And probably Ted, too.
Most of my time is in the San Francisco Bay Area, but I do have lots of friends in Idaho.
Oh, okay. Well, I heard that the state legislature in Idaho voted to end the COVID emergency, and they're waiting for the state Senate to consent to that, and then there'll be no more COVID restrictions there. Do you know anything about that?
No, but let's stick to the 9/11 subject tonight.
Okay. Well, that's it. That's all I wanted to ask. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, David. Okay. And I don't see anyone else wanting to ask a question yet. If anyone does, it's last chance, *6. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Richard and Ted, for being on tonight and for all that you do. That all sounds very exciting, and I know I'll be tuning into to the weekend event. So thanks again, and we'll have you on again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay, we will see you soon. All right. Okay, we're going to go on to our next speaker now, and Ann is going to be introducing him, Ann Hendricks. Hang on, Ann, I just unmuted you and then muted you again. Okay, and let me unmute Jamie. Okay, Ann, would you introduce our next guest? Thank you.
Thanks. Hi, Jamie Lee is. He lives in Northern California. He used to be a Wall Street banker for about 25 years' experience in that field, and then he moved on to raise organic food at his 100-year-old farm. He is presenting tonight on the California fires. He has just published another book called Paradise Lost, The Great California Fire Chronicles. In the last couple of years, he produced about 80 YouTube videos investigating the Paradise fires. So thanks for talking with us tonight, Jamie.
Thank you,
hey,
Ann, and thank you, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Cheryl, I believe it is, and David, thank you for doing this. I mean, one of the things Truth or Community needs is all your work, and I was listening to your back office stuff a little bit, and, you know, my dad used to say to us all the time with our big family, love one another, you know, because you guys are doing great work, and Mr. Gates and you other gentlemen and ladies that are doing the caring, the 9/11 is, it's awesome to hear it still talked about, to tell you the truth, because so much gets swept under the rug, so thank you both, and Ann, thank you for the books, and thank you for bringing me on the show.
Okay, yeah, please jump right in.
Okay, well, my background, as Ann referred to, was an analyst at Wall Street. I had my own investment banking company, but it's more about experiences and dealing, being around the way the system has worked, and the way it works is for capitalists capitalizing, and when capitalists capitalize, money is the root of all evil for sure. And I was in the game, and I left when I saw where it was going, to the place we're at today, and sorry to say worse, where technology and the gray matter, the gray goo they talk about is when technology takes over humanity, and we're clearly seeing that today. So bringing that home out here in California where I've lived and grown up, I know weather. I've windsurfed on the bays. I'm very familiar with the whole Bay Area. And I started with 9/11, started my first YouTube channel, Taboo Towards a Better Understanding, blog.com, and that started me in the social media and reporting on 9/11 and all the anomalies, one of them being, which I don't know if any of the people have bring up very much at all, but that Hurricane Aaron the day before 9/11, there was a 500-mile east-southeast in New York smoke plume of World Trade Center Twin Towers. A cold front swept through the east, rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures dropped to 70 degrees, 6 to 12. So this was a hurricane that was coming right in. And what that ties into is the technology that exists, and my analyst background allows me to go into research analyst places that other people can't, because it's about business, it's not about selling. And so when you're in the background, you can get much more information, forecasts, products, that kind of thing. So I knew about these systems that existed, like the TR-3 Adams system with Lockheed, which is an area defense anti-munitions laser weapon, which they have on their website, laser weapons. It's not an unknown thing. And they have Athena, which is Advanced Test High Energy Asset. Athena is the goddess of war, right? So there's on Lockheed's website these TR-3Bs, which we now have photographed in the skies around the event horizons in Australia and up in Canada and down here in California, the technology that exists to be able to carry out what most people can't fathom or consider or conceive. You know, what we couldn't consider or conceive was the 2001 buildings coming down. There's nobody that foresaw that, unless you paid attention to predictive programming and got into the whole imagery of the dark side where they kind of tell you what they're going to do before they do it. No, there's no denial this was an attack. That's not a question for any of the 9/11 truthers. Well, the same thing has to be brought up to speed as far as the directed energy weapons or DOES, And these directed energy weapons are very basic. You can go into your 7-Eleven and for a dollar, you can buy a laser, a green laser beam, right? It's not advanced technology. It's just not known. Just like nanotechnology is a $1 trillion business. It's not talked about. 70, 80 billion in our food alone, nanotechnology. It's very advanced, and that's the gray state. And that has to do with very high processing powers and some real dark energies that are very intelligent and use intelligent gathering with the systems they have. And the systems they have as far as being able to frequency modulate anything at any level they want down to the molecular level, whether it be a building with beams or a person with blood, they can assimilate a frequency. And if you get on a frequency chart and understand how many frequencies there are, there's hundreds and hundreds. I forget the number. Thousand. Either, so you can look up the frequencies. Our own visible frequency is maybe 7 out of 100% we can see. The rest is invisible. So I compare that to think about if you're flying in a plane at 30,000 feet at 500 miles an hour and you can get an IP address to you and you can download and upload. That's one IP address. Then you got the GPS system trying. Then you got this and that. So they have technologies that can definitely make this possible. Where I was in Santa Rosa on October 7th, I was looking up some redwood trees, and they were blowing, and it was, I take the weather every day because I'm a geoengineerist. I wrote a book on geoengineering and chemtrails. They're real. They can manipulate the weather. They have to. And so I got outside, and the big redwood trees were blowing, and I had no wind. It was like a 6-mile-an-hour wind forecast for that day. So blowing the redwoods means there's something going on, and I get out there, and I see these blue pulse flashes. And then the next day, there's dustification of neighborhoods, surgically dustifications, down to the porcelain, down to the iron, down to the floor with white phosphorus, which is part of the conductive material of nanobot technology. And nanobot technology is used in all the programming for all the event horizons as well. It's a combination of technologies that they use to do this. And so when we see trees that are burning from the bottom, which I did up in Paradise. Paradise got hit on November 18th, 2018. 52,000 people, official stories say, they got out. The town was only 26,915 people. I talked to hundreds of people. I interviewed many people who said they were not allowed out of there that day. There were military police from other places that knew about it. They were already there. None of their guys were there. I interviewed the tow truck driver who said, I'd never seen anything like it. The bodies were burned all the way down to the floorboards. The bones were sitting on the floorboards. I saw the same thing. I said, how many people did you see when you went in there? He says, I saw 200 easy. The official story is 86. Captain Ken Pimlott, the official guy for Cal Fire, he was on CBS 60 Minutes and said the fire was traveling in Paradise east to west. Get this, 80 football fields a minute. That's 273 miles an hour going east to west, and I've windsurfed all my life. We don't get winds in the Bay Area east to west. We got the Sierras to block them, El Dorado. This was right at Buchanan, and this is right protected, and there's no way that fire profile could happen coming from above Paradise, sweeping down. That's why nobody got notified, but everybody got out. Yet the story is, no, they didn't get out. And so I got visited at my night in the spiritual side of things. The people in limbo that got perished by these weapons. And we do have pictures. They gave me pictures of, you can see the laser beams, because when you get dustification, it creates, lasers are invisible for the most part, the technology. And they can when they hit the ground, though, with the dust and stuff, you can see them. And that they got pictures of them. So we have proof, but there's just nobody to talk to tell these stories to. When the cars are flipped over on the roofs, 3,500-pound cars, dozens, flipped on their roofs, and they call it a forest fire. It's an insult to everybody's intelligence that was here for this thing. But everybody's, their minds are just blown because they can't believe technology this evil can be used. What do we got? We got a double hurricane, double barrel coming in on the geoengineered Gulf Coast again, like the geoengineered Katrina. They're pounding New Orleans again. They're just directed energies wherever they want. They can do the weather with all the aluminum they spray with chemtrails. And they can steer it anywhere they want with those radar machines that they have, those golf, the what's it called? You know, you see on the news, the Doppler radar, Doppler machines. Those frequencies, those radio frequencies, take the aluminum and steer the clouds because we don't can't make rain anymore because of all the coal tar ash. And they steer these clouds with the technology using the aluminum. And then they have in chemtrails is barium, strontium, aluminum. And the strontium is used to condense clouds to make rain because the condensation molecules we used to have naturally have been diluted because of the weight of the coal tar ash and our pollutants. And so they have to manufacture the weather. And that's what they did before 9/11 to create the directed energy, to create the towers coming down in 10.3 seconds, melted steel. If it was just explosions, there'd be a bigger mess, much bigger mess. And we all know it was justified. We all know how fast it came down. And the technology existed then. It's not new. It's just being utilized now. And if Tesla had free energy 100 years ago, what do you think they have now, given Moore's law that says technology doubles in knowledge every year? So they have this technology, they just don't use it, but they can. And now out here in California, we're getting microgridded, and you can feel the energy fields drop out here in the weather, the cold plasma, and any cold plasma to create the vortex energy, to create the swirling structure, to create the right frequencies. Because they do it really acutely. With the spinning, they can get much more acute frequencies, and they can hit you from above, or they can hit you from underground lightning. It's called ULF, underground low frequencies. And we saw trees burn from the bottom. We've seen that today now in California. We have chem fog out here, the way they park these fogs, that has smart dust, if you've gotten into smart dust. I mean, yeah, I figure you guys are truthers, and you can handle a big, big story like this. But smart dust is not anything that's not admitted by the guys that make it. If you look up smart dust, you'll see the companies that manufacture it, and they put it in the weather systems, and we uphale that within our blood-brain barriers because it's so tiny, the particulate matters. And they can make fog, they can make microgrid energies, they can, you know, and now we're seeing what they did to 9/11. They're using precision lasers to take out homes in different sections and redeveloping according to the Agenda 21 protocol they stated they were going to do in 1991 in Rio. And it's just the same thing with 9/11. It was on 9/11. Well, what's this year, 2020? What is 2020? Perfect vision. And their mantra is, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And we're the blind, right? So now we're into 2020. It's their perfect vision. What's us? We're blinded by the light. We burn. And that's what they're doing with the fires. It's very biblical in a lot of ways, and a bigger picture than the mechanics of what, who, how, and legal and all that. But it's understanding that this is a plan by some very evil people who have a sick agenda, who have a plan. And that plan is not known. So we can look back and say, well, we got to help what happened here and prove this and that too, but we also got to be aware for ourselves, our livelihoods, our well-beings. And I encourage everybody to look into these new vaccines. These are horrid, what they're doing I can't tell you what that means, what they're doing with the test kits and everything. That's just a whole other subject in itself. But back to directed energy weaponry, this is something that I saw personally, and there's three aeronautical engineer manufacturer companies that make the products for this in Santa Rosa where I was living, and none of those places got hit. It got everywhere around there. The trees weren't burnt, but the houses were dustified. It takes 2,500 degrees to melt tempered glass in a car, and they can surgically hit anything, anybody, anywhere they want, and that's been an old technology underground, you know, knowledge, but we all knew it analyst-wise because it's a different world there. Wall Street is just business. And when I used to ask, you know, about, okay, these effluents are going from our waste products of our business, or our guys that we support, they're putting this effluents into the Potomac River. Isn't that something we should be concerned about? And, you know, it's Wall Street, 55th floor, mahogany tables and stuff. And the head guy swivels around. He wasn't paying attention. He swivels around. He goes, Jamie, we're a family here. If you're not part of the family, there's the door. And that's the way Wall Street thinks, you guys. And the group stock is growing to just a finite, the FANG guys, right? Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, and Google. It's a one world order that they said they were going to create from a beautiful old world order that was before us. And technology overtake it, and now it's being used against us in many different ways. But we're going to win now because we see them and we're calling them out. So anyway, I've talked enough, so thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you. Jamie, and let's open it up for the Q&A. me just get back on my page here. Okay. Okay, please star six if you have a question for Jamie or a comment. And Jamie, while we're waiting for people to get on the queue, do you feel like local governments in California are aware of all of this, or are they pretending they don't know about it, or do they not genuinely get it? Oh, and you must be muted. Hang on one second. Once I put you into... Sorry, I'm sorry. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, I heard your question.
Okay.
Say it again, will you, just short?
Yeah, do you feel like local governments in California are aware of what you just talked about with those fires, or do you think they don't know?
No, we've attended many local community government municipalities, and it's all owned and scripted and run by the same entities that are controlled. The spider web is just so integrated, it's really hard for people to comprehend that this system in place is completely owned and cannot be changed. The only thing we did is in Mendocino County here, which we're very spread out in the north, about 2 hours north of San Francisco, is we crafted a bill in November 2016 that passed by 68% Measure S that declared that the Community Bill of Rights supersedes state and federal law in a legal document. And they've been working on, these lawyers have been working on it for 10 years, and we were the first one in the country. And we passed a local law stating our intention to have nature represented. So nature exists, and that way she can be protected in court. So you can protect the redwoods and the water and things like that. The third, we did a preemptive ban fracking. And unfortunately, I wanted to go, and the time wasn't right, I wanted to go and right after we passed this and saying we're the boss, go and commandeer the pension fund of Mendocino County, which had $325 million of our money. And ask the people in the community, you want to support your redwoods, you want to support us, you want to support this new way of doing it ourselves, and, you know, we're the law. And the sheriff said it was a legal document. The board of supervisors said they follow us, but it was like herding cats out here. Everybody's got their own thing going on. But it's still viable to do is make your declaration of what you want in your community. And that's why they took away freedom to assemble is such a huge, huge part of this equation. You know, now we're freedom to talk on the, you know what I mean?
Right, right. That makes sense, yeah. Okay, thank you. So we have some questions here. The first one is Kat McGuire. Kat, go ahead.
Hi, this is Kat. Thank you so much for your report. My question has to do with Paradise. It seems like such an innocent small town. Have they been Agenda 21? And if not, why were they targeted?
Good question. And I just invite you all to either suspend your belief system for a second, or take off your close viewfinder and look deep, deep, deep down history lane, and know that this history of what we've been told is not anything near what the real story is about. And I've just done a whole book, I'm just finishing on a book called About the Tartarians, which I invite everybody to look into. But in San Francisco, the story of the finding gold and having covered wagons, when they had railway systems, they had these beautiful fairs, they had technology beyond our perceptions, right? So, wait, I forgot. Kat, say the question again. I'm sorry.
Paradise. Was it Agenda 21? And if not, why were they targeted, such an innocent town?
Yeah, so that gets back to John Milton's book back in 1668, Paradise Lost. And John Milton died on November 8th, and the attacks were on November 8th. And Paradise is sacred land. California is sacred land to people that own everything. The legal documents are the trilaterals, or the bank is the City of London, the religion is the Vatican, and the Washington, D.C. is the military. That's the corporation that rules over everything else. You impeach a president, you go to legal. So it's always law and order. That's why you have to change your laws with your intention and your hearing. You have to speak out. So in Paradise, 1668, John Milton dies, so they have this about the fallen angel, about the whole story of Michael and the fallen angel Lucifer who comes down and rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. And so ruling in hell has been the 1850s, 1870s, when a lot of history got reversed and changed. And so from then on, we've been under a story. And once one generation believes something or learns something, the next generation assumes it to be true. They took away the African mothers when they became parents when they came over because they didn't want the children to learn the history. They wanted to teach them the new history. Rockefeller got the school systems in the 1920s. He's owned them since then. So everything we thought to be true has been basically something they've wanted us to know. Paradise is their home. This is the Bohemian globe. They love California, and so they're making it their own. Well, the rest of it is the Agenda 21, as you refer to, is biodiversity zones where there's too many rural people can't exist, and the next virus, I guarantee you, will be of pets affecting each other and pets affecting people and cattle and stuff, and they won't allow you food. That's the next on this agenda here. So paradise was selected because that's where they set their home. And John Bidwell, who settled into Chico in that area in the Butte, that was the first claims by the Jesuits, the Freemasons, that came in to California after the end of the big floods. And most people don't know that California was an island up until 1820. Yes. There's 250 maps at the Stanford Research, 150 maps in the Stanford Research Institute approving that California was an island up until the 1820s. And again, they had weather modification in my geoengineering book for 100 years. So paradise was used to clear out and clean out. When I went there right after they reopened it, 3 weeks after the military would let us in, not only see the torch cars and the bodies and all that kind of stuff, but they were putting up Wi-Fi. They were putting in all of the underground and above ground 5G, and they were cutting down trees. The fire profiles, they're so evil. Well, they're so good at what they do, too, is that the underground fires would only burn up to 23 feet up the barks. I couldn't figure out why. And I knew the trees were being burned inside, but I said, why only 23 feet? And then it turns out that the Earth's aura is 23 feet above the ground. I did not know that. And so they were using the energy of the Earth's vibrational frequencies in order to make their cuts up underneath the trees. It's like, wow, they got this dialed in. And they could still harvest the lumber up there in paradise because Red Emerson, who owns more land than Ted Turner, he gets all the contracts for all the burnt trees, and they were all perfectly fine to sell as lodgepole pines at big bucks. And he makes the money off it. The first thing they did was haul all the trees out. Even the good trees were cut down. No, this was genocide. There's no other way to say it. And the lies there on lies are everybody at the big level. You ask me about a local-level politician, local-level fireman. You don't know. You don't know what side they're on because they have to protect whatever, and they're sworn to whatever, you know. And those oaths go all the way up to the presidents, you know. Trump was Scottish Rite Freemason. Most of them were Freemasons, you know. It's not secret. George Washington's tombstone, top of it says Freemason. Then it says first president. You know, we got to lift our heads as to how long we've been being played. And this is the activation of their, as Celeste Lam, who was a 20-year FEMA officer. She's speaking out now. Celeste Salama, I really invite you to listen to her stuff. It's amazing what she's saying about the plans and the agenda, which I always knew circumferentially, but she's inside saying this. I've interviewed her like 3 times on my channel. So paradise was about reclaiming the lands for them again, and California will be their playground because it's the home of Queen Calithia. And, you know, it's just their claiming of lands because they can. And they're impoverishing everybody. I don't know if you saw Germany's paying $1,400 a person for the next 3 years. So everybody's going to be on a government subsidy, and you're going to do what they say because it's a socialist system being in a socialist system. And unless you do your own thing and find your own way around this and build your community and say, you know what, you're bossed, I'm going to do it our way. But there's a system in place, getting back to Mendocino, all legal document, the community – for Environmental Legal Defense Fund, Cell Death. And you can email me and I'll send you the links, Tom Lindsay. They're the ones that crafted our documents, and wherever you live, whatever you're doing, you can do it in groups, even over the internet, and declare and make your declarations and file it and say this is who we are. And you have a right to your water, you have a right to food, you have a right to your energy, because you're say-so. And we don't think that way anymore. We always want to govern, which means to rule, and mental mind to tell us what to do. And I don't agree with that system in any way, shape, or form anymore. And I hope you two all think about, you know, taking back your power about knowing where stuff comes from and being able to grow your own food and build your own community, because that's what it's coming down to now. You know, anyway, long-winded answer.
Thank you. Okay, thanks, Kat. And next we have Nita Renfrew. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. Hi. Thank you. You mentioned that there's a story about the test kits, and I don't expect you to get into a lot of detail, but could you just say a few words about that?
About the what? I'm sorry. Something
kits? The test kits.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's the nanotechnology and vaccines, or you look at the root of vaccines, vaca is cow, comes from the cowpox. We've been told a whole story about that it's supposed to make you better. Western medicine is the worst out of 28 countries, worst in the world. My dad's a physician. Sorry, Dad. But we're for profit. That's the only thing that matters in keeping people sick, because vaccines are a beautiful way to do that. This new generation of vaccines coming out are going to be transhumanizing people to a way that nobody be taking over your intelligence, literally. But the true vaccine of the implant, according to Celeste Salam, who was insider on this, is the test kits, where you do get tested, and they are putting the, not just chips, these are self-assembling systems of frequency modulators, and they can be tuned at different frequencies to do different things based on what your body's doing. You know, remember Star Trek, you had the tricorder, it could read you? Well, these things are inside you, reading you. We know the technology is coming, where a doctor can scan you and tell you if you've been taking your medicine or not. That's the surface stuff. Below that, it's super advanced from there. So in this nanotechnology inside the test kit itself, which has a self motor, it runs on, as the blood flows, it recharges the batteries. These are in the nanobots. Look up nanobots if you really want to get started on this, and then look up nanobot agriculture and read about all that. But we're in a world where all of this takes over, and, you know, it's really hard to tell people that the tests are poisoned because they think they're doing the right thing. When in fact, it's if you use any critical thinking at all, the people that are doing this all have the same background, and they all have religious backgrounds, and they all relate back to the Vatican. And it's not a mental war, it's not a physical, it's a spiritual war they're waging. We better find ourselves and not just our country, which is a corporation. You know, most people don't understand that before it was named Washington, D.C., it was named Rome, Maryland. The Potomac used to be called the Tiber River. The White House is named after Father Andrew White, the first archbishop that landed on the boat, called the Freemason, into Jamestown. Don't believe a word I say. Look it up for yourself. And it's all in the documents. John Carroll, who founded Georgetown University 6 months before Washington, D.C. Now, one person can tell me what District of Columbia means. What district is it of? It's right there in front of us. Why is George Washington the apotheosis at the top of the Capitol building? You know, it's all symbolic. And who did it? You know, these are really great powers that run the mechanisms that control our lives on this outer world life. So we have to create a community where we live. And that's what we used to do. And technology has to go find its spot, but not in mainstream of our lives. And that's hard to do for everybody. But
you're saying
that's
that
how we get
already
out of this.
You're saying that they're implanting the technology already, the nanobots, already with the test kits before the vaccine. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and it goes much bigger than that. Sorry to say, sad to report, but true. It's in your clothing. RFID nanotechnology, they can put it anywhere. And then they got, you know, where they went from to go to these D-Wave computers that are way past you heard about quantum computers, but the D-Wave computers, there's 100,000 D-Wave computers in CERN alone, that big magnetic big magnetic attraction thing under Switzerland. No, it's just we don't hear about all this. And so, yes, in our bodies, too, we have the nano. If you want to, I'm assuming you guys are all truthers and can handle it, just take a white bowl, get some red wine or get some organic apple juice and gurgle it. But first put the juice in the bowl and see there's nothing in there, and then gargle with it for a good minute. And then spit it back out, and you're going to see nail fibers come out. And do it before you eat. Everybody, you'll find you all have this in you. Then get a little isopropyl, some little rubbing alcohol, and pour a capful in, and watch them come to life and dance. And watch them change colors under a microscope. It's transhumanism by silent weapons for quiet wars. And we know 9/11 was, you know, the beginning of the World War III. That's what it was for them. So we have to have we got to find our own plans and agendas to motivate and get inspired by others, but do it in our communities and start saying what we want, not what we don't want. That's one way out of this mess. And the technology is going to be used for whatever it is, but we're spiritual beings, and we'll be able to handle it if we, you know, keep speaking truth. We'll be taken care of. And I honor all of you listening for just listening to this, because you and I both know there's not many people that listen to us because we're crazy or whatever, but so be it.
Okay. Thanks, Nita. Okay. Next, Ann Hendricks, you're next. Go ahead.
Well, hi, Jamie. You come on like a hurricane. You kind of leave us, some of us, speechless here. Can you talk a little bit about the human element of the fires in recent years, especially the firefighters? What did they think about the strangeness of the fires, like the firenados and all of that, different things?
Thank you, Helena. And I'm sorry to come at you like the shotgun approach stuff, but it just needs to get out. You know what I mean? And I don't get much of an audience, so excuse me if I'm blasting away. But ask me again the question.
The firefighters. How do they view the strangeness of the fires? With, like, the firenados?
Yeah, sure, and things never seen before, but just that they've been conditioned to think and act a certain way, and they've got their job and their families and those kind of things. And so 99% of them just go about their business, and they know something's wrong. And I would go to the firehouses and give them my geoengineering books, and, you know, the guys that are around there were doing this, and the younger guys would love the books, and the guys higher up were just giving me the stink eye because they were the Freemasons, because every department, they're unifying all the local fire departments into Cal Fire now, you know, and so these guys are just all kind of have to follow and have to live on what they get, and they can't question much. Same in Wall Street. You can't question much. You depend on it, and they got you by the need, you know, and so the firefighters that I met that I have put in my book and the dedication to John Lord, first of all, and Matt Dankin, not second by any means, they've come on record with 6 hours, 7 hours of testimony. They came up with me twice, fire captains for 20 years, both of them, one of them very highly decorated and accredited, local, and they sought me out. I put them on my social media, and it caught fire. And anyway, so they had the same kind of conclusions, the abnormals, the firenados they've so sensed, the trees exploding. You know, all of that is no profiles they've ever seen. I just talked to Matt the other day about these hundreds and hundreds of lightning strikes coming out like they did. And a lot of it is for photo shoots because they're just creating it in the sky and just going boom, 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 but they're hitting the stuff from underground. That's why you see the trees on fire underground. It's an old magic trick kind of thing. And they publish it like crazy, like California is on fire, when it's surgical in certain areas and their fire warnings are only here or only there. So, you know, I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Yes. Yeah, it did.
Yeah, and so we're just in a mode of watch. I watch the weather all the time. I can tell when they're bringing it in. I make peace with it. I make sure I find a way to say I see you. And when you see something, I don't know if you've done the 9/11 trick with the dollar bill, the 5, the 10, the 20, the 50. Have you all done that?
I've seen it.
Okay, so that breaks a spell. You know, black magic is something that's real, and they really use it on us because we're energy beings, and they know energy, and they tell us we're physical beings instead of energy beings, and they play with our frequencies. So we're stronger when we do stuff like this because shining light into the darkness, it's not dark anymore, but darkness shining into the light can never put out the light, ever. And that's what I honor all you guys doing for and ladies is doing that, you know. But the change for long term comes community, is the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Ann. Next is Fern Tishman. Fern, go ahead.
Hi. My name is Fern. Today, well, my question would be, it's 5G related, but I want to bring up, like, I really, I have right by my bed, I always read about Hurricane Erin, which was followed by Hurricane Katrina, and they were both related to Halliburton and real estate, and I was passing the Empire State Building, and I just looked at it. And the both World Trade Center buildings were much bigger than that, and I was thinking of what the government did to create such a thing to create war, because the Empire State Building is not as big as the two World Trade Center towers. And I have this book by my side, and I often see the cars and the trucks that were exploded, and I read the firefighters' thoughts of how they had all this energy coming out of them, and today, this whole bunch in Bellevue Hospital, you know, today, this is 20 years later, still affected by all of the lead energy. And so, like, you just poured up a lot of thoughts that I wanted to share. And I also identify with, you know, follow the money. It just doesn't make sense to me how people could take their money in front of so many, you know, 5G, COVID-19. Like, it's all about money. It's really kind of insane. But thank you for sharing, and I don't know how to ask a question. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing yourself. Thank you very much.
Okay, so thank you for, we had a person, an anonymous person who, I didn't know who they were, so I couldn't call on them, and I think they've just left, they've gotten out of the queue. So I'm sorry about that. If you are anonymous, I just didn't know who you were. Okay, so Jamie, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. And again, maybe you could tell us again about your book and how we can get a copy of that.
I have just social media on YouTube, a plane, P-L-A, like aeroplane, P-L-A-N-E, a plane truth 5, and that's because I've been shut down 4 times already by YouTube for community guidelines strikes when I'm just publishing, like, public speaking, people speaking truths at little Democratic local public meetings and, you know, saying military people, and they're giving me community strikes for that on my YouTube channels. So A Plain Truth 5 is where you can locate that. My book I just published is Paradise Lost, the California Fire Chronicles. And I cover 2 years of the fires and the wind profiles, which they said the wind was the main excuse for all this, and how that doesn't make any sense and a lot of other things. So hopefully people will buy the book. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it at Amazon under that title, or James W. Lee. I have 2 other books as well, and I got my 4th book I just submitted to the publisher, and it's just to help us understand a world, a different world than the story we've been told. And it's a beautiful story about learning about deep, dark truths and then what used to be a beautiful place before all the technology took over. And that's what this next book is about. Anyway, thank you.
All right, thank you, Jamie, and you're welcome to stay on and listen to, through the end of the call, or if you need to go, that's fine too. Whatever you choose.
I'd love to listen. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to go back to... Okay, and I'm going to just unmute our next speaker and introduce her, and just bear with me a moment.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, hi, Beverly. Yes, okay. You're unmuted. So I'm just going to introduce you, and then you can and do your thing. And I did get your real bio, the one that you sent me. So Beverly Rubik earned her Ph.D. in biophysics at the University of California in Berkeley and has conducted research for nearly 40 years on the energy field of life, the biofield. She's an internationally renowned expert on the biofield and energy medicine, and the author of over 90 scientific papers and 2 books. She has conducted research on the effects of 4G on human exposure and the blood, and was a featured expert interviewed in the recent 5G crisis summit, and we'll put in the minutes the website for that summit. Dr. Rubik is founder and president of the Initiative for Frontier Science, a 501c3 nonprofit in Emeryville, California. She's an adjunct faculty member in the College of Integrative Health Studies at Saybrook University in Pasadena. And Beverly has a website, which is brubik.com. So, Beverly, thank you for joining us, and please go ahead.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. So I'm going to speak about the question, is 5G possibly involved in the COVID-19 pandemic? And I'm approaching this as a scientist, looking at the scientific literature as well as medical evidence from physicians, some of whom I know. And you probably all know that what 5G is. It's a protocol for the next generation of wireless. And it's the kingpin, really, of technocracy in terms of hooking everything to the Internet, including us, the Internet of Things, along with all living things and non-living things. And it involves a range of new frequencies that are higher and more deleterious to life than even the microwaves of 4G and 3G and 2G. But it also involves an intensification of 4G. It requires a higher densification of the 4G antennas everywhere. And we'll still rely more on 4G because those frequencies, which are radio waves, will penetrate further, and some of the gigahertz millimeter wave frequencies are absorbed by building materials, trees, etc. So it's really a combination of both 4G intensified and new frequencies of 5G, plus 42,000, last I heard, and maybe more, satellites in lower Earth orbit also blasting every square inch of the world with these frequencies, making a totally wireless worldwide web accessible everywhere. So that's the plan. And that's all I'm going to say about 5G. The pandemic broke out in Wuhan, China. At least this is what we're told, the initial site. And frankly, they had the most intense implementation of 5G shortly before. That went live on October 31st, 2019. And we may not have been told the exact date when the disease began in Wuhan, again, because the Chinese bureaucracy was not even acknowledging that there was a disease. And then there was that Dr. Li who spoke out and said he's seen something new, and he was silenced, ridiculed, and then he died, in fact, of the disease. Or maybe he died of the ventilator, which could have killed him. So it's clear that 5G was in Wuhan. It was their model city in China, completely 5G'd. Then this was followed by the disease outbreak in other sites on Earth where 5G had been implemented on land, but to a lesser degree. So we see South Korea, Northern Italy, New York City, and also Southern California near Los Angeles. So these two things indicate a possible correlation between the pandemic and 5G. This is not necessarily causative, at least not yet. I'm trying to build a case here. We also have some of the launching of the 5G satellites. I heard that some 600 or more have been launched by now, and then I tried very hard to find out whether they were operational. And my understanding is they're not yet operational, at least the ones sent up by the United States. I don't know about China or other countries. And, you know, we're on a, shall we say, a race, according to our administration, with China to do this sooner than later, because they see it as a money-making venture and also putting the United States in a supreme position. Now, we can look back at the space race and the arms race, the missile race, and this just seems to follow through, the 5G race, more the same. So I don't know that the 5G frequencies have been turned on yet, and I doubt it, because I recently learned that they're going to be turned on in September, the United States ones. The SpaceX OneWeb and Amazon launch satellites is about 700. And they're going to be turned on for latitude 44 upward. That's the northernmost U.S. states, Washington across to Maine, and then parts of Canada. So we can look forward to that in September. I don't know when the rest will go on, but they were set back in launching them because of COVID. And, you know, I guess people weren't going to work. So I really can't say to what extent satellite blasting of the Earth may have occurred or contributed to COVID, but we can expect that that's going to be part of the future very soon, and it may be a contributor in ways that I'm going to talk about down the line here now. So historically, other viral pandemics have correlated with the widespread proliferation of new electromagnetic technology. This was brought out in a book by Arthur Furstenberg. His book is called The Invisible Rainbow. And I can't say that I fully agree with Arthur's treatise. He follows Rudolf Steiner, whom I very much admire. but he doesn't believe in the virus. I do believe in viruses. I work with them in laboratories. They are real. They do infect cells. And they're not just exosomes. They're not just exudates. They have structure. They have the same genetic material each time, which may mutate, but it's not just garbage coming out of the cell. So Arthur makes a case that all pandemics have always been caused by electrification of the earth in novel ways. And he goes back to 1890 in his book, where at the beginning of electric power, the Russian flu was killed 1 million people, according to what we hear today. In 1918, the famous Spanish flu, which was the most devastating pandemic in recent times, H1N1, that killed some 50 million and infected about 500 million, coincided with powerful radio stations being introduced. Then in 1957, powerful radar and the Asian flu, H2N2, about 2 million deaths. In 1968, there was the Hong Kong flu with H3N2, and 3 to 4 million deaths with that flu, and now COVID, and of course the introduction of more and more wireless, let's put it that way. 4G, to me, is just as devastating as 5G in terms of the frequency is affecting life, but I think millimeter waves, the way the beams are focused in very narrow beams and phased arrays, they can be used as weapons. And they really were exclusively used by the military, and there is no even standard meter for the frequencies of 5G above 6 gigahertz, except military grade, and you're going to need about $100,000 to get a meter to figure out whether you've got 5G exposure or not. So what are the studies about the exposure of radio frequencies, microwaves, and millimeter waves on the human immune system? Well, it disrupts the human immune system, and that can mean either it increases the activity of the immune system or it suppresses it. So we see in some experiments and some studies, and there are about 24 studies, and you can find those studies at the website bioinitiative.org, and they were posted there by Dr. Cindy Sage. She made tables of how the immune system is hit, disrupted by 4G, 5G frequencies, about 24 papers there. And so disrupting the immune system, one could increase the susceptibility of infection. In other words, people's resistance goes down. That's one possibility. But it could also excessively contribute to what are called the cytokine storms with COVID-19. That is the hyperimmune response, where people actually, their organs shut down from the level of inflammation and chemistry going on with cytokine storms. So it could happen either way as a result of exposure to 4G, 5G. It could do it. So there's also some other papers besides Cindy Sage that go into this. And I published this in a newsletter recently, the United States Psychotronics Association, which we can make a link to if you'd like. So it's certainly a fact that human exposure to radio frequencies causes a very large variety of unhealthy effects, including inflammation and pathological changes. And if you take a look at like bioinitiative.org, which is one of the best informational websites about wireless affecting human health and the environment, you'll see a major tome written like a white paper with many, many references showing changes in humans and animals, such as intracellular calcium overload. In other words, membrane permeability is affected and calcium rushes in. But calcium is an important regulator that controls many cell functions that if it's in excess, would lead to disrupting many delicate biochemical regulations in the cell. What you get then are increases in oxidative stress, free radicals. You get damage to sperm and eggs. You get central nervous system changes. You get changes in the heart and hormones, in programmed cell death and red blood cell damage and more. Now, I did a study on the blood in 2014 that was funded by the Weston A. Price Foundation, and they were curious to know whether their diet, as recommended by well, is originally elucidated by Weston A. Price, a dentist, decades ago, would help protect against wireless damage. And so I did the study and involved adults between 20 and 75. And what I found is that everyone was affected by short-term wearing of a cell phone, 4G, LTE, in a backpack, not even using it. I looked at their blood under the microscope at very high power. It was about 8,000 power, photographed it, and scored it according to things that I know because I've been looking at blood for 25 years at problems. For example, the shape of the red blood cells, presence of early fibrin or early clotting, which is a sign of inflammation, and the stickiness of red blood cells. Those are some of the parameters I looked at. And everybody showed, except one person, showed an increase in stickiness of red blood cells just for 45 minutes wearing a cell phone in a backpack, not using it. The phone was turned on, ready to receive a call or text, but one did not come in. And so then I looked at the blood once again after they used the phone for 45 minutes, and this involved holding the phone in one hand at least and going on websites and also making 2 5-minute phone calls to me on a landline nearby. And then I looked at the blood after the 45-minute active use exposure and found that the blood got worse. In some cases, the blood was stickier. In other cases, the cells were completely disheveled. They were in a form called the echinocyte, which is a spiked red blood cell that really can't carry oxygen very well. And when blood cells stick together or are spiky, they really can't get through the microcapillary system of the body of any tissue. And that means that the microcapillaries would be shut down and there would be a condition of hypoxia. And so because red blood cells are actually wider in diameter than the tiniest microcapillaries. So they actually have to scrunch down. They have to be single file and isolated and scrunching down in order to fit through those microcapillaries. And if they're stuck together or spiky, they're not going to make it, and they're not going to carry oxygen well. And you may know about COVID is that it's not really viral pneumonia. There were some doctors who spoke out. It's more about a hypoxia condition, a lack of oxygen, and ventilators were not helping because the blood simply wasn't taking the oxygen in. That seemed to be the problem. And it's as if they were at high altitude, according to some physicians, and the ventilators were initially thought to help them, but no, actually was causing trouble because their bodies simply couldn't absorb the oxygen. And another interesting fact is that The hydroxychloroquine and also chloroquine, which are drugs used for malaria that have been around for 60 years, work very well for COVID-19. And you may be aware of the controversy where Fauci and his cronies say, we can't use it, there's nothing proven here. And yet there's the doctors, the first responders who go to Washington even and hold a forum and tell the world, it works, we've cured everyone with hydroxychloroquine, and then they lose their jobs. And so why is that the situation? Well, you can't make money on a drug that's off patent, that's old. That's one reason. And I think because they have an agenda to vaccinate, as the last speaker was saying, and do things to us with those vaccinations, that if they found a good, cheap cure, then that would disrupt their agenda. So why is it that a drug for malaria would work for COVID? I asked myself that initially, and then I know that malaria actually is a parasite that enters the red blood cell and eats up the hemoglobin and prevents oxygen from binding to the red blood cell. So it looks very much like COVID is more of a disease of the red blood cell than it is of the lungs. But of course, in later stages, one does get pneumonia, fluid does build up in the lung, and there are other changes in the body. And so it's hydroxychloroquine along with zinc and erythromycin, an antibiotic that they're giving in a 3-drug dose that seems to do the job. So the evidence is that COVID-19 patients are really suffering from lack of oxygen due to destruction of hemoglobin, which is the molecule in red blood cells that binds and transports oxygen. And there even was a Chinese paper on that showing that a certain chain of the virus bound to the hemoglobin, and there was an English translation of it. And some of these papers coming out in other languages and then translated show up for a little while, and then suddenly they're retracted or the journal removes them for no reason at all. It's as if they really don't want us to see the real science, and they put instead this fake science, this sham science, this really a mockery of science is what Fauci and his cronies are promulgating in front of us. So much of it is false. It just breaks my heart. No one has really isolated the virus, has shown that that is the same virus in 100 people or 1,000 people, and the testing using the polymerase chain reaction, RNA tests or PCR, RNA is not a clinical test. I know, in fact, the man who developed it, he was a colleague of mine at Berkeley, and if he were alive today, he would roll over and be clamoring that his test is for laboratory use or industrial use, never made for the clinic. And so we can't trust the numbers of cases. We can't trust the numbers of deaths. We know also that medical centers are getting paid handsomely from the U.S. government when they have COVID cases, and maybe states are getting more aid if they have more cases. So there's an incentive to overreport COVID cases. And the test is as much as 80% inaccurate in terms of false positives. And that's in the literature, in the scientific literature. I've read those papers. So not only my study, but there's other studies showing that wireless radiation from our technology causes sticky blood, sticky red blood cells. There was another study by Magda Havas, a researcher in Canada who did a very similar study to me on red blood cells and microscopy. But there are other studies as well showing that it causes clumping of the red blood cells, and then they can no longer effectively pick up oxygen. And by the way, this is also a problem in the older patients. So people who are old tend to have a little bit of clumping of red blood cells, and especially if they're carrying a cell phone on their bodies, as I point out to them. This is something anybody over 50 should never do for the sake of ruining their blood circulation and exacerbating early aging. So let me move on to my conclusions. Oh, and there's a couple more papers I'd like to mention. One was a paper done in Spain, and there was an English translation of it made and posted online. I don't know if that still exists, but that paper delved into, and it was very lengthy, it looked at regions around the world where 5G had been implemented, at least in part, and the initial spread of COVID-19, which was pretty rapid and disparate all over the world. And it showed the link, the high correlation of 5G rollout and COVID cases. And even sometimes in cities where 5G rollout was more in a certain region of a city and not at all in another region, they showed how the cases showed up where the 5G had been rolled out. So there's some other evidence that the 60 gigahertz of 5G affects oxygen molecules in the air, and that may also disrupt the absorption of oxygen by hemoglobin in the blood. And then there was a recent paper that got a lot of attention. For example, greenmedinfo.com, Sayer G's website, and he's a great holistic resource person in medicine. He clamored about it, but it was really only an editorial that said that maybe 5G will make viruses in the skin cells. And it was only an editorial, meaning it was speculative and it didn't have any data. But nonetheless, it was out there. And then it was retracted, as many of these papers are. So let me tell you my conclusions. I don't see clear evidence that 5G is the sole cause of the pandemic, as some people have claimed, and that is, for example, Tom Cowan, anthroposophical doctor in San Francisco, and Arthur Furstenberg, another follower of Rudolf Steiner. It seems to me that those two people, and there may be others, who think that there's no virus, that it's all about 5G, I really think there's a virus. But I think that it's complex. I think there is a contagious element that's a virus. That virus also will be mutating because it's been traveling the world, and that's what viruses do. So by now, there's probably I don't know, at least 10 or 12 strains, and they would have different sequences, and that will make it complicated and probably require at least 4 vaccinations a year if they're going to keep following this thing for the next few years. But I would say there's indirect evidence that 5G is involved in the pandemic as a possible causal factor. And, you know, there's never been an epidemic where you would say it's all about a virus. Every epidemic historically or pandemic has involved multiple factors. And we can look back to the 1918 pandemic of the flu, which coincided with the beginning of World War I. It seemed to have broken out in the U.S. first, although it's called the Spanish flu. People were under duress with a world war. Men were in the trenches. They didn't have toilets or running water. So there were hygiene issues as well as war, which mind-body affects the immune system. So I can see at least 3 factors: a virus, the immune system down because of wartime, and poor hygiene. And today it seems like we're not allowed to talk about the multiplicity of factors involved in our pandemic. Why is that? It seems to me if we're going to lick this problem and get on with life, which every government should be trying to do, getting back to normalcy and not some new normal, as they call it, that we would be looking at all the factors and having an intelligent discussion about this. But instead, what's happened is the censorship of material like mine that links 5G potentially to COVID-19. If you put those two things together and go to Google, you're only going to get, this is pure rubbish, conspiracy, et cetera. There's nothing here, folks, nothing to see. And it's simply not allowed, this discussion, and that's very dangerous. So here are the ways in which I think they may be linked, and then I'll stop and you can have discussion. I think that 5G can possibly exacerbate the virulence of the COVID-19 by, number one, disrupting the immune system, either hyperactivating it or diminishing it so that you catch viruses, or the hyperactivation leading to this cytokine storm, which will kill you if not controlled. Number two, by disrupting the oxygen uptake and transport by the hemoglobin in the red blood cells, leading to hypoxia, which is one of the symptoms of COVID. So it might exacerbate that problem. And the 5G can also disrupt the integrity of cell membranes to allow the virus to infect the body more readily. So with that, I think we really need to put a moratorium on 5G. And if anybody knows we can get to Trump to recommend that he create an executive order to put a moratorium on 5G, I would very much be delighted to be connected with those people. Because if we don't do this soon, this rollout starting in September and the further launching of satellites will be upon us, and then I think there's no return. So now I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Beverly. Okay. I'm going to put us in Q&A. So again, *6 if you want to ask Beverly a question. And Beverly, while we're waiting for them, I'll ask you a question. Let me unmute you here. Okay, you're unmuted. You know, these PCR tests, are they able to distinguish between the coronavirus itself, and I understand there's a whole bunch of other coronaviruses that have been around with us for a long time that are in the common cold. Can that test separate those out and tell us which one it is that they're showing positive for?
No. In fact, I heard if you have the common cold or any common cold recently, and I don't know how long you would test positive for COVID, but it will test positive. And I don't know how long that will last, probably as long as that virus may be circulating in your system, which may be even beyond the symptoms for another month or so. So that's problematic. And just as soon as sniffle season begins, fall and winter, we can expect another big peak and probably more lockdowns or more reversal of the minor, let's say, breather that we got during some of the summer, but not in California. We're still pretty much on large numbers of cases here. But I can expect that they're going to see another peak, whether it's coronavirus, COVID, or some other coronaviruses like common cold ones. We won't know. The test is does not distinguish.
Oh, boy. Thank you. That's really frightening, all of it. Okay, here we have our first question for you. This is from someone who's come in, it says Robinson 2, and
this
I don't know
actually,
from, go ahead.
This is Gene. I thank you. It's a great conversations tonight. My question was, you said that 5G affected red blood cells by making them sticky. I had bought a $1,300 device by a company called Blue Shield called the Ultra, and it doesn't block EMF radiation, 5G towers, but it says it simulates natural frequencies. I don't know. I'm going to try it out.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm also a research scientist who tests products like that for corporate clients. And I have to say, there's a plethora now of so-called protective products against 4G, 5G. Buyer beware. Show me who did independent scientific research and published in a peer-reviewed journal showing you it's safe. Almost none of them have any. They just won't spend the bucks to do it or to get people like me to do it. And that's a problem. Because then people think they're safe, and they flaunt their phone, and they stick it in their bra or their pocket, and they say, yeah, I'm protected. I got this sticker on the backside of my phone. I don't care. Everything's fine. I've heard this time and time again in my office from clients, and I just have to laugh. They're having faith in something that's unsubstantial.
Now, this company, Blue Shield, provides a study that shows white blood cells, and that's why my question was going with, you showed red blood cells. They were showing that white blood cells, after a certain amount of time with this product, start to regain their roundness and they're not clustered together. Can you say anything on white blood cells?
Are you sure it was white blood cells? Because there's so few white blood cells in the blood. There's about one every 500 cells, and most of them are never stuck together unless you've got an infection.
I'm like 99% sure that's what they were talking about.
Well, I have trouble believing
I'll
it.
Look in the
I've only seen stuck
could...
together white blood cells when somebody walks in with an acute infection or cancer or something where they really have an exacerbated immune response.
If your contact information is in the meeting minutes, would you mind if I emailed you some information on that?
No, go right ahead. I'd like to look at it.
More
of these are coming out, and it's really scary to me because I don't see the science there. I don't see independent testing by people without a vested interest in the money and selling these things. You understand that?
Yeah.
So they're selling stuff. They're making money, but they haven't had independent scientists validate what they've got. And that's
so
serious.
So we're talking about the device I mentioned. We're talking about like the Organite.
Yeah, all of that. But Organite is, probably nobody's going to pay for a test on it. There's because it's not a proprietary thing. Anybody can dump metal into some resin and say, hey, I've got this protective device. And then there's Shungite, a mineral from Russia. But, I've tried to get funding, and I'm a nonprofit. I run a nonprofit lab to try to compare some of these. And if anybody knows where I can get funding to do that, because the only funds I typically get is from one company to study their thing, and I never get enough funding to compare products to find out what might work for whom or whether combination products might do the job. We really need to come together and have these studies. We also really need a meter for 5G, and that's something my lab is working on. And I don't know if Harry Jabs is on the call, but he's my partner, and he's been working on a dosimeter as well as a meter for 5G, a people's meter that will be affordable and not $150,000 military grade. So that's something we also need some funding to move forward with.
I'm definitely going to keep track of your organization and yourself. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. And next we have a call from a question from someone who's, I don't have your name here, but your phone number is 407-844-1701. So if you could identify yourself.
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Donnay Robinson, and hello, and thank you for the presentation. I had a question regarding, I think Trump did sign the Secure 5G and Beyond Act of 2020 on March 23rd, but...
Yes, I'm aware of it.
So getting back to the question, I was curious, will the implementation or the activation of 5G next month when you spoke of, will that affect ethnicities or races with lower hemoglobin levels more severely as far as the hypoxia goes? Is that a possibility?
Well, let me ask you a sub-question to that. What makes you think there are some races that have less hemoglobin than others?
I mean, honestly, studies I've looked at from the National Institute of Health that state that African Americans supposedly do, but I was wondering if that's a thing in terms of, you know, being subject to hypoxia at a faster level or a higher level.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that 5G can cause a hypoxia, and 4G as well. And if they're going to intensify that, we can expect more sticky blood, more misshapen red blood cells, and poorer circulation in the extremities and deep in organs and tissues, all of them in our bodies. And so it's in effect a type of hypoxia and accelerated aging and builds a toxic environment because the blood is cleansing, bringing nutrition as well as oxygen, taking away toxins. And so it's just with less circulation in all of your organs and tissues, it's an unhealthy cesspool.
Interesting. So
and I don't know about the racial differences or whether we can go that far with it in saying this, because honestly, I never read about that, and I wonder if it's not more environmental or dietary and not innate.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. That was my question. I was just wondering,
yeah.
I mean, based
on
the
studies. You know, the African Americans, some of them have the gene for the prevent the malaria organism from what happens when malaria invades. Let's see, malaria is an organism that, of course, is heavily found in Africa, where black people evolved, or at least were first on this earth. And sickle cell anemia is having two copies of the gene, and not just one copy of the gene that would make them resistant to malaria, but sickle cell anemia makes the red blood cells suddenly change shape to the shape of a sickle, from an oval to a sickle, and then they don't circulate very well. And so that's a disease that's only found in the African-American population. But they have the protection against malaria if they carry one copy of that gene for the sickle cell gene, because then the malaria organism can't invade the red blood cell. Now, I don't know if that means the COVID can't invade the red blood cell, but that's interesting about the malaria. So they have that adaptation.
Definitely familiar. Okay. All right. Thank you for answering that question. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Danny. And then we have the next question is from Lynn Fraley. Lynn, go ahead.
Thank you so much. Question, Beverly, would vitamin D have any effect with COVID as far as you can tell?
Would what? What?
Vitamin D as in dog.
Vitamin D as in dog?
Right.
I don't know, vitamin D. You know, we always think about these nutritionals in kind of an isolation. Of course, that's involved with calcium and with also vitamin K2. So there are tough ways of thinking about it.
Oh, may I chime in?
Well,
sure,
actually,
go ahead, Harry.
This is Harry Japs. I'm working with Beverly. I'm her partner, and we work in the laboratory together. What I understand about vitamin D is that microwaves and also millimeter waves, which are really radar waves, when they impinge on the skin, then they interfere with the body's ability to make either vitamin D or vitamin D precursors, which are normally made in the skin when sunlight impinges on it. So since modern man spends now most of his time indoors, even glass windows, even if somebody has a window office and say, oh, I get a lot of sunshine through my windows, that's not true, because that glass pane is changing the spectrum. And so anybody being indoors gets an unnatural exposure to light. And everybody who's outdoors gets a natural exposure to light. And the natural the natural spectrum of the sunlight is conducive to producing the vitamin D. And what we really need, I think, if I get the numbers right, is maybe half an hour of daylight and we get sufficient vitamin D. However, when we are being exposed to microwaves and millimeter waves, then this process is impeded. So I would expect that in addition to all of the other detrimental things that microwaves and millimeter waves are doing to our bodies, that this is yet another factor where we likely will have less vitamin D available than we would normally do.
That's great. And Deborah, ask what the microcalcifications in women's breasts.
I can hardly hear you.
I'm so sorry. Can I ask about the microcalcifications that are found in women's breasts that have been diagnosed as DCIS and even stage 1 cancer? Would you really relate that to radiation or waves?
Well, I don't know if I relate that to radiation, but that may be the body's attempt to wall off a tumor. You know, the body uses calcifications to wall off things. I know my brother once had a burst appendicitis. He didn't go in on time to get it removed. And guess what happened? He was spared. His body made and totally encapsulated his burst appendix quickly in calcifications. And it spared him this horrible septicemia from spreading. So cancer is often associated with microcrystallizations, not just in breasts, but elsewhere. But think about how 5G, 4G affect calcium flow in the cells. They do definitely move calcium into cells that shouldn't be there by disrupting the cell membrane permeability and altering some of these special pores that let in calcium only. So it could be related to that. And I know you hear stories of women who put a cell phone in their bra and then they get a tumor in the very location where that cell phone was stored. So I do think there's definitely a relationship there.
Thank you so much. Terrific.
Okay. So that's the end of our questions, Beverly. I just had one more myself for you, and Craig, I don't know if you have one. I know you can't get in the queue. So, but face masks, are they dangerous? Do they work? What are your thoughts on those?
What is that?
Face masks.
Oh, face masks. Sorry, man.
Yeah.
It's hard
yeah.
to hear the F's and the S's. Well, I think it's pretty useless. What a face mask is more psychological than not. The viruses are small. If you really had a mask that would prevent something that small from going in and out, you wouldn't be able to breathe. It would be such a tight mesh around your face, you know. And now there's something really goofy going on in Maine. I heard they have some kind of neck collar that looks like one of these dog funnels that they put around dogs' necks so they don't bite their tails or their backsides. And now waitresses and waiters have to wear that in Maine by law. So they're really getting carried away with this physical protection that's pretty useless. Even the CDC said masks didn't work. And initially you heard how much people fiddle with masks. They touch their faces. And then you see people wearing the mask down around their chin or they pull it off their nose. I mean, the mask, the conventional surgical mask, the blue and white mask with a little elastic around the ears, comes with directions that says this does not protect you against a virus. Basically, it's to prevent surgeons from spitting into your body when they do surgery. So it has nothing to do with protecting against viruses. So it's all hype. And I think it's more of an initiation and a slow torture, really, to keep people from communicating. This business of six-foot distancing and the mask wearing is part of the ritual of coming into the New World Order and giving up an older identity. In the same way that they're taking down statues, and today I heard that Squaw Valley, California, this wonderful ski site, the word squaw has to go. And, you know, the renaming of everything that's going on around us, statue defamation, and it's killing the culture. It's and building something else. that we don't necessarily want, and it's not our doing. It's the doing of a few, and they're imposing it on us, so it's hardly democratic.
Yeah, I would agree with you on all of that, yeah. We actually have two more people who have questions. Are you open for that right now?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, great, okay. Adam Ruff, you're next. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Adam Ruff speaking, by the way. I'm just wondering if you are aware of the new German extra-parliamentary inquiry committee. They're trying to gather up experts worldwide to confront the overreaction to COVID. And they have a website. It's www.acu2020.org. And I've listened to their first video. It's unfortunately, it's in German, so you have to read the translation. But they're making some very powerful statements about the fraudulent nature of much of the response to COVID. And I think they might be interested in and benefit from your expertise if you might contact them.
Yes,
so I'm just wondering if you've heard of it.
I can say that. I'm German. German is my native tongue. So, and I watched it, and I can tell you that they are very, very pissed. Excuse my language here, but that's the best to describe it. And by now, 1,000 doctors have come together, and they had it. They have essentially declared that the political system has completely failed the public, the medical system has failed the public, the European Union has failed the public, and they have said that there is no way that they can rely on any of these official sources, and they have to take matters into their own hands because it's a life of matter and it's a matter of life and death. And they have been very scientific. They have they are engaging in the discussion that under normal circumstances this world should have, but is not allowed to. And they simply say, okay, we can no longer go along with the officialdom. We have to do something extra-parliamentarian, and that's what we're going to do. And so they essentially entirely bypassed the political and the medical system and all of the cartels. And they said, we have given up on you. And they did that based on science, and they are to be taken very, very seriously because these are true experts, not just political experts with monetary incentives to get their patented products out there and get rich. These are people who care for their brethren. These are people who take their oath very seriously. And these are people who truly want to help people, and they see that the entire COVID charade is just that.
I agree 100% with everything you just said.
Okay. Thank you, Adam, for that information. Next we have Edward Spencer. Edward, go ahead.
Hi. Excuse me, is that Spencer? Hi, Beverly, great job. You know, this whole thing with the virus sort of started about 170 years ago with Pasteur versus Duchamp. And I wonder, you know, germ theory versus terrain theory. And I wonder if you have anything to say to that, about that.
Yeah. I do. You know, it's interesting that it was Pasteur who gave us the germ theory, but he was reputed to have said on his deathbed, the germ is nothing, the terrain is everything, and that his adversary, Béchamp, was correct. It was all about the soil of the body. And I do think that it's really both. There are germs. If our terrain is healthy, then we will resist them. But our terrain is not healthy. We have lost diversity. Our microbiomes are pathetic compared to that of our ancestors. And that's why when we travel like to Mexico as Americans, we often get sick. We have such poor diversity in our colons. So we're learning a lot about the microbiome, the fact that we have 10 times more microbes within and on our body than human cells. That's a fact. And that they work in harmony. They're symbiotic. And we need them. And right now, all this hand sanitizer and slapping of antimicrobial solutions all over everything is so really ridiculous, utterly so, and will destroy the microbiomes. I noticed my fingernails have been getting splitting and everything from being stuck slapping this these solutions on when you walk into a grocery store, which they make you do. And I'm going to start wearing gloves just to avoid the hand sanitizers because there's a lot of toxic ingredients in those. So I'm quite interested in the terrain. The health of the terrain is something we all need to work on, the soil of the body. And that's the best way to protect ourselves against infection, is to strengthen and have the appropriate microbiome in our various compartments and on our skin. And we need to restore that. And part of it is getting back into nature and also handshaking, hugging, and kissing. And all the things that we're not allowed to do, really, with COVID is making us like isolated beings, not passing on healthy microbiome. So we should, and I encourage everybody who comes to my laboratory these days, take off your mask, take off your gloves. Let's have a handshake and a hug because we need to exchange healthy bacteria. That's part of being social, being a social species, which we are. And this business of being isolated is bound to make people sicker in the long run because their microbiomes are going to collapse.
All right.
I have to ask a question. Catherine, I'm going to send this to Catherine if I can get the playback data. I can call you to get that, I presume,
back. Yeah, I think it'll be on a website. I can get you that. When will that be?
Okay. Well,
you mean the call tonight will be, it'll go up this evening, I think.
I see. Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, and is your first name Spencer rather than Edward? Did I get that backwards?
No, it's Edward Spencer.
It is, okay. Okay, good.
And he's a physician.
He's a physician?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for joining us and sharing that. And we have actually one more question from Adam again. Adam, go ahead.
Hi, this is Adam once again. I just wanted to ask a question. It's a fairly dark thought, but I think it needs to be asked. I personally believe that the people that are behind all these ridiculous measures, like the masking and the social distancing and the constant cleaning of the hands with sanitizer, I don't believe they're incompetent or stupid.
No, not at all.
I think the whole thing is a plan,
yes.
And I have a very dark suspicion that the plan involves a lot of people dying, like to the tune of millions and millions of people.
Yes, make that about 90%. That's the plan.
There's a dark plan. It is a plandemic, the documentary reveals.
And by the way, there's documentation. It's not just me saying that. There's actually documentation. The plan has been established over the last, 230 years. It's a very long-range plan. It's a plan that spans multi-generations. It is a very sophisticated plan. It is, I'm not shy to say, it's a diabolical plan. And I personally am now believing that this plan is not even entirely human-made. I believe that this plan is truly demonic. And I have reason to believe that. That would be a very long discussion, but I have to be brief here. Just to confirm your suspicion, from the top of my head, I could give you at least half a dozen sources that are quite serious that you can go into, and those were sources that have been leaked over the last 100 years, and each one paints the same picture, and that is that there positively is a certain group, it's a very small group of humans, that have had the strong desire to control the entire planet and have had that for over 250 years approximately. And these people do not give up, and they will do everything that they can to implement their plan. And the plan has been implemented in stages. The founding of this nation, the United States, was part of that plan. The founding of this nation was not what we are being told. In fact, it was actually a big experiment, and it's still going on. And right now, we're in the end stages. Right now, if you get the feeling that at least since 9/11, all the stops have been pulled out, then you are probably correct, because there is a time window that is closing for this group, and that has to do, in my opinion, that's my opinion, with a galactic constellation. As the solar system orbits the center of the galaxy, the solar system enters sectors of energy that are higher or less. And I believe we have entered a sector that has higher energy in quotation marks. It's more like a consciousness energy. And so as a result, the public is becoming more psychic. The public is becoming more aware. The public is becoming more intuitive. And propaganda that used to work 50 or 100 years ago really well is no longer working. So the control systems are breaking down, and at the same time, the public is waking up. So the group that had these plans, they are a little bit caught between a rock and a hard place. So in order to facilitate their agenda, they have to pull out all the stops, but to the extent that they do, they have to reveal their hand. And right now with COVID, it has been so egregious. It was already egregious with 9/11, but with COVID, it's over the top. It's now beyond bizarre or almost stupid. It's literally Kafkaesque.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, all set, Adam?
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate the talk. It was extremely informative.
Okay, great. And we have actually one more question from Ann Hendricks. Ann, go ahead.
Hi, Beverly. Thanks. It's Ann. I don't have a question. I just want to make a comment. Thank you so much. You've spoken so many heartening things, you and your associates. I just wanted to say, if any of you have some links that you would like to share with the group, we can put them in the minutes. If you want to send them maybe to Cheryl, that would be great. Cheryl, can I just go ahead and give your email to
sure.
send links
yep.
to? Okay, for research or any of the topics that you want us to learn more about. It's cherculturt@aol.com.
I think I was emailing that, right? Isn't that correct?
Right, right,
okay.
Yes.
I have that then.
Right. Yeah, send everyone, just if you want to share anything with the rest of us or some of the further information on what you've spoken about, go
yes,
ahead and
send
it.
Yes, I have a
Cheryl.
Write-up on this. I can put... give you a copy of that paper. It went into the United States Psychotronics Association newsletter, but they don't own copyright, so I will allow you to use it as well, because my talk, essentially the points are made there.
Great. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, good points, Ann. Thank you. And Beverly, I just have one question to you or your colleagues here. You might not know the answer to this, but I'm just wondering, do you know if any doctors like yourselves who understand, you know, about the COVID and the testing, that it, you know, it's doesn't work. And have they got anyone contacted the governors of the states and said, you know, and actually given them the truth about this? And do you know any of that is happening?
Well,
or
I don't know, and maybe it's happening, but you know, the doctors don't administer those tests, and they usually don't get involved in testing. I mean, back in 1972, they made the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Act that separated the physicians from laboratory work. And that is a law, a federal law. And so doctors can't administer lab tests, and they don't get that involved in them. So they probably just take them on their word. And, you know, but lab people know better. I mean, PCR is a lab test. It's something you do in the laboratory or in industry, but it's never to be used clinically. And so there are now manuscripts, there are scientific papers that said 80% false positives with the PCR test for COVID. I've read them. And I'm flabbergasted that they keep pushing that test. There's also an antibody test, but that just says you had an exposure to it. Well, you know, that you have some active response to it. But it's so ridiculous, this PCR test. They've never developed an appropriate test, and they've never even, let's say, tested 100 or 1,000 people to show evidence of a virus. I think a lot of the COVID cases that are numbered COVID cases as well as deaths are wrongly assigned. In other words, we can't trust any of the numbers, and yet everybody's going on those numbers to make political decisions. That's the problem. They don't have any good science. They've hijacked the science, and I would say that's deliberate. You know, you don't do such bad science. We know a lot about viruses for the last 50 years, so what is going on here? And every time papers appear, there was a paper from India that showed the sequence of the SARS-CoV-2, which is causing the COVID-19, is a chimera of three viruses. It's got coronavirus, which is the virus causing common cold. It's got part of HIV, and it's got part of the old SARS virus from 2003. So it's a chimera. It would never come about in nature. It was made in a laboratory. That paper was retracted and removed. All these papers that come out that are telling us the truth in science are one by one slowly or sometimes rapidly getting removed from journals, retracted, and no good reason. And so if you follow the trail of science appearing and disappearing, you have to scratch your head and say that the science is being hijacked.
Right.
Anybody who's trying to get to the bottom
yeah.
of it is they're being thwarted. Their work is removed. And then, you know, they might put it up on some website, but you sure can't Google it because Google censors stuff like that.
Right.
And even Scholar Google censors it. Scholar.google.com, which would be the equivalent database to look up scientific or other scholarly peer-reviewed journal papers. You can't find them. They're being removed from that. So we have the problem of censorship of journals that have been co-opted by the power structure so that they remove whatever they're told, probably because they get money from Big Pharma to keep solvent. You know, and that's mm-hmm. one of the culprits in this whole thing is this industry that's too big to exist. But it exists. It's too big.
Right.
It should not exist. But it can call the shots because it has so much money. And ditto with Big Telecom. I don't know which one is bigger, Big Pharma or Big Telecom. But together with Big Oil and those three, they control governments. They control the world.
Yeah, it is truly frightening. It really is.
So, I mean, we have a lot of homework to do to get people informed about these things, and we're not conspiracy theorists. We're truth seekers.
Exactly, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Beverly, for joining the call tonight. I really thoroughly learned a lot, and thank you. It was very informative. You're welcome to stay on our next portion. We just talk about the events that are happening locally or any comments anyone wants to make. Any topics, so you're welcome to listen or hang up, whatever you want to do.
But thank you so much.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. Okay, good
okay.
night, everyone.
Okay, thank you so much. Yeah.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay, so we're now going into our announcement, et cetera, portion of the program. Everyone's unmuted, except for those who want to be muted. And so does anyone have any announcements to make or anything?
This is Gene from Pittsburgh. Just curious, does anybody know of any events going on in Manhattan the week of 9/11?
Doesn't sound like it.
Okay. I'm going to be there at Pauley Square the whole week. I also am purchasing a blue laser beam to in tribute of World Trade Center 7. So whenever the lights are on, I'm planning on being there somewhere with a very powerful blue beam. It's going to be really thin, but there's going to be a third beam.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, great. Yeah.
This is Pat. I have an announcement.
Yeah, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. On September 11th in Madison, Wisconsin, Kevin Barrett is going to be part of putting on a 9/11 event at Garner Harrison Park Shelter at 6 p.m. On Friday, September 11th. That's Garner Harrison Park in Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay. Anybody else with anything to announce?
Yeah, this is Adam Ruff again. I'm starting a movement, I hope, to unmask everyone, so to speak. And so I'm calling it the Great Unmasking. And I'm patterning this after Gandhi's first protest in South Africa, where he burned his second-class citizenship card, his apartheid card. He burned that, and that was his very first official protest. So I'm calling for masks to be taken off and either shredded or cut or burned on 9/11, and that will symbolize all of us unmasking the truth, not only about COVID, but about false flags and all the other lies we've been told. So I'm calling it the Great Unmasking, and I'm hoping there will be an event in every city across the world. Why not think big?
Now that sounds great, Adam. I like that. And, you know, I think without the masks, like the masks sort of keep us a reminder daily that we're in this horrible thing. We have to be afraid. If people didn't have to wear the masks, I think we wouldn't be thinking about this hardly at all. So that they're really important. Yeah.
Well, you just hit on a very important psychological aspect of the masks. And this is something I study a lot of, the psychology behind the way things work. And when crowds of people are wearing masks, it's proven that they are much more aggressive and much more likely to be violent, because they feel that they're acting anonymously. The mask gives them a feeling that they're anonymous. And you'll notice that people that are engaged in rioting or, you know, attacking people or burning buildings, they're all wearing masks. And that's because it gives them that feeling of anonymity. And also, what you said is extremely important. As long as people are wearing masks everywhere you go and you see it everywhere, you believe psychologically that COVID is still happening. So it's a constant reminder, and without it, I think you're right. I think people would realize that the whole thing is over with.
Exactly, yeah. Now, Adam, do you have any kind of website or anywhere where you're promoting this?
Well, I just did a post on my Facebook homepage so far, but I'm planning on doing a video and putting it on YouTube. And basically, all I want to do is say I'm unmasking myself. My name is Adam Ruff. I'm unmasking myself. I'll cut a mask to pieces and throw it away and say, join me in unmasking the truth on 9/11. And I just want people to start their own event because it's very easy. So they can just start their own event in each city across the world. All you'll need is a trash can, a pair of scissors, and a mask. And get out there and videotape it and unmask yourself. And I think if we do that in big enough numbers, it'll catch on.
Put it on Twitter.
Yeah, and I wonder if... Oh, go ahead.
I just said put it on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm going to try my best to promote the idea, but, you know, just one guy on a budget of zero, I don't know how much I can do, but I'm definitely going to put all my effort into it.
I think that would go viral if it got to a certain number of people, and I think that would go viral. And I think we should connect it to, or at least I try to do it, is to boycott any company that will, you know, makes you wear a mask.
Yeah. Well, I've done a lot of research into it. It's the masks are against so many laws that it would be difficult for me to explain in 10 minutes how many laws they're violating. But I'll just tell you, it violates OSHA standards both nationally and in your state, because the masks trap CO2 inside, which displaces the oxygen, which gives you hypoxia or hypercapnia and causes a lot of harm. And as your experts were just saying, they do nothing to block viruses, so the utility of using them is ridiculous. So we got to take them off, and I hope it will catch on like Gandhi's protest did.
Yeah, great idea.
Can I ask a question or a possible suggestion on the mask issue?
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, this is Carl Golovin. I think many, if not all, executive orders from governors probably contain a medical exception to the wearing of a mask. And it seems, you know, and they're thereby acknowledging that there are at least physical conditions that it would be harmful for a person to wear a mask. So they can't be excluded from a building merely for not wearing a mask if they would be harmed by wearing it. So to extrapolate from there, arguably health is comprised of body, mind, and spirit. And arguably the mask is destructive of both mind and spirit. One's having to testify to the fraud every time you put it on. So I think an argument can be perfectly structured that you're claiming a medical exemption because it would be destructive of both your mind and spirit to wear it because you know it's a fraud.
Yeah. Well, if those on the call are not aware of it, there's a lady doing great work on this. Just go to thehealthyamerican.org, and her name is Peggy Hall, and she's got a whole series of videos about all the laws that are being violated by these mask orders. And they're not really orders, by the way, because the governors cannot make law. They're the executive branch. They don't get to make laws. So a lot of people are under the misconception that it's a law that you have to wear a mask, but it's not a law. It's a recommendation from the health department, which you don't have to follow. And you do have medical exemptions listed in the orders, but the problem is that the press and the government are not getting that information out to the people. So all these companies like grocery stores and restaurants, they think that it's a law that you have to wear a mask, and they think that if they let you in without a mask, that they are going to be fined or they'll lose their business license or whatever. So they're very militant about it. In fact, I got kicked out of my local grocery store by the police, who actually helped them violate my civil rights.
What state do you live in, Adam?
I'm in California, not too far from Los Angeles.
Okay. Wow, that's pretty serious. I don't wear my mask ever when I go into the grocery stores and or the big stores. And in my state, Connecticut, they just ignore it, so they're fine. They don't bother me. But like, I'm the only one doing it. Everyone else wears the mask. I don't understand people. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, they're under the misconception that the masks actually protect them, which is false. And they're also under the misconception that it's a law that they have to wear it, which is also false.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is Pat. I have a suggestion for the destroying of the masks. We should use thermite. Get the firework sparklers, because those are thermite.
Uh-huh, yep.
Burn them up with those. Wouldn't that make a statement on 9/11?
Yeah, that actually would. That's a good idea.
Okay, anyone else have a comment? Or?
Well, I can give you a little bit of info that I found out about the laws that are being violated by the mask recommendations. The Americans with Disabilities Act says specifically that a person with a medical condition cannot be discriminated against, just as a person with a handicap can't be discriminated against. So if you have a medical condition that precludes you from wearing a mask and you go into a store, a public place like a grocery store, and they won't allow you to go in, they're actually violating the Americans with Disabilities Act, because they have to treat you exactly the same as their other customers. So that's one. And then here in California, Civil Code 51C basically says the same thing, but it's a law on the state level. So it says they can't discriminate against you if you have a medical condition.
Okay. Anybody else with any to add to that, or a different topic? Or
I guess, Cheryl, this is Ann. I guess I'll just mention something. I refuse to wear a mask at all, period. I haven't done that and never will, no matter what the circumstances or our requirements coming about. I'm not going to, and I'll accept whatever those consequences are. But I think one thing that I have learned from others is that, you know, people don't give us our natural rights. We have natural rights, and one of them is we're human and we need to breathe freely. So it's just something to think about, that nobody else should be given, you shouldn't be looking to anybody else to give you what is naturally yours, or the freedom of speech or what. We have natural rights and equality. And anyway, it's just something to ponder.
Yeah, good point, Ann. Yeah. Anybody else?
Well, I can put in one more little tidbit of information. I've actually looked all the way to the Geneva Conventions Against War Crimes. And in the Geneva Conventions Against War Crimes, which many, many countries are signatories to, it says specifically that even on prisoners of war, you cannot mandate any medical intervention on them against their will. If you do, it's a war crime. So what they're actually doing and talking about doing to us with mandatory vaccines is a war crime. It's literally a war crime.
Yeah, that's good to know. I mean, that's interesting. Yeah. That probably won't stop them from doing it, but
right, because they're totally rogue at this point. I mean, it's obvious that they have an agenda and they're going to go with it 100% until the wheels fall off.
Right. If we don't push back, they're not going to stop. Yeah. All right. Any other announcements, thoughts, comments? All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. I thought that was we had some really great speakers, and it was a great, great informative evening.
Terrific.
We'll see you next month. Yeah, the next meeting is on September 30th, and anyone have any suggestions for the speaker, let us know. We'll see you all next month.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Craig, are you there? Craig? No, not you. Craig?